Inner Voice, a heartfelt chat with Dr. Fujian.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain and have Sean in studio.
It's a show about what matters most in our life, our minds, our thoughts, feelings, actions, relationships, and our fulfillment in this beautiful journey of life. In this show, I'll bring you Dr. Babak Kotep. He is a neuroscientist with more than 20 years of research experience and the founder of the Society for Brain Mapping and Therapeutics. Today, we will be talking about his latest research on COVID-19, a review of a 21st century pandemic from etiology to neuropsychiatric implications. We will talk about ways to prevent getting infected, to what to do if you are, and much, much more. Then I'll speak to Thelma Lobel. She's an internationally recognized psychologist. She's an author and the expert on human behavior. Today, we will be talking about her latest book, Whatever Works, The Small Cues That Make Surprising Differences in Our Success at Work and How to Create a Happier Office. We will be talking about matters that you never thought really mattered, and yet they are so significant in your productivity and fulfillment of life. I love hearing from you, so connect with me through my website, fujian.com. And follow my social media and message me with your comments and topics of interest. I love to hear from you and engage with you. But first, here's the tip of the week. Today, I'd like to talk about people who sit in your heart and leave an amazing footprint by just who they are. Have you ever experienced meeting someone in your life, whether you work with them or were a member of your family or met through your friends, and you know instantly that they are special and they hold a special place in your heart? Have you ever thought, what is it about them that makes them not only special, but also pass real quickly and at times bypass your assessment criteria and landed inside your heart? And though this is what humanity should be all about, and it is all about, right? There's some people that have had such an effect in my life. I had found myself wishing to be in their presence, to learn from them, and aspire to be them. I wondered, what is it about them that holds this type of connective energy? And I noticed they hold an essence of love, a love that is not attached to one person, but is connected to people, a type of love that holds moral values, betterment of humanity at large, with a commitment to take a stand for what they believe in, and a humanity and a humility of being service to all who are present. So as I strive to be and feel the connected energy, I also witness what holds me back. Have you noticed what holds you back from all that you want to be and all that you want to express? So I noticed with many people, myself and many people that come into contact with, what holds them back is fear. Fear of playing big, fear of failure, fear of actually being seen and not liked, fear of not coming through, and fear of being betrayed by others. Many irrational beliefs has helped them hold back. Lack of self-worth or questioning whether they have anything to offer holds them from expressing who they are and what they believe. So what is different for the people who become special? They don't think that they're special, but know that they offer. What they offer is special and matters. They know how much their love, moral values, and attention is worth, and they offer it free to everyone, even to the ones that they don't want it. Most of all, they know their vision and goal, which is way beyond their personal needs, are committed to pursuing their vision and don't get distracted by other people's games, manipulations, diversion, or distraction. So let's observe. What is it that you strive for? Is it bigger than you? Does it include the values of humanity? What are all the ways that you are living your vision? What stops you from fully living your vision? Who would you be without those obstacles? Who would you be without those fears? What do you need to go beyond your fears or obstacles? What is stopping you from gaining the skills to go beyond those obstacles? And when is the time to take a stand for you? And I wish and I hope that it's now. Wishing you all to be aspiring to be you, to be the real you. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with Dr. Baba Kata.
Have you ever wished you could just wake up one day, reach across your nightstand, and hit the life reset button? Let's face it, the struggles and frustrations of everyday life leave millions of women and men around the globe yearning for a new way. And the new way is right here in Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want by Dr. Fujian Zain. You can get it now at Fujian.com or Amazon.com. Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want. You deserve it.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain, and I'm so excited to have Dr. Babak Kotep with us. He's the neuroscientist with more than 20 years of research experience. His research has been focused on introduction of advanced diagnostics and therapeutics into clinical neuroscience in order to rapidly identify, introduce game-changing technologies to treat neurological disorders such as brain cancer, Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, and other brain and spinal disorders. He's the founder of the Society of Brain Mapping and Therapeutics, which I am so excited to also be a part of. And today we will be talking about his latest research, which came with a collaboration with many people from that association on COVID-19, a review of 21st century pandemic from etiology to neuropsychiatry implications. Thank you for being on the show, Dr. Kadeb.
My pleasure, Dr. Fujian. It's a great pleasure to be here, and I thank you for the opportunity, and thank your viewers for watching your fabulous program.
Dr. Kotev, we're going into the second wave all over the world again. So I know that based on your latest research, you've really looked at all aspects of this matter, not only symptomology, but also the latest medications, even mental health aspect, nutritional aspect, and now, you know, medication and vaccination. Can you share with us the latest that you know?
Sure. Actually, we spent about 7 months putting together the most comprehensive review yet published in Journal of Alzheimer's Disease about COVID-19. As you may know, most journals have limitations on number of tables and pictures and references and number of words. So in this case, we are grateful to Journal of Alzheimer's Disease that they did not have those limitations, therefore allowed us to basically review over 1,000 papers, reference about 425 of them, and have tables and the images to basically convey where the vaccine and the therapeutics trials are. So in the course of study, obviously, my own mother was sick and was in and out of the ICU at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center. And we collaborated with a team of about 36 scientists and physicians to put this paper together, which was published in September issue of Journal of Alzheimer's Disease. And basically, we identified, a series of major symptoms in the COVID-19 patients that we have to predict, prevent, and treat. So in this paper, we talk about, obviously, ARDS and which is basically acute respiratory disease syndrome, and cytokine storm, and basically acute coagulable state and hypercoagulable state, as well as sepsis, acute hypervolume state, and also the autonomic dysfunction. So as physicians, if we know all these steps, we could actually prevent or predict and try to prevent or treat them. So I think this paper will help our colleagues to come to the speed on these aspects. Now, we also talked about treatments, including drugs like remdesivir and Avigan, which are RNA-dependent RNA polymerase inhibitors and shown to be very productive. We also talked about the monoclonal antibody in this paper, as well as a new generation of nanosensors that could actually potentially be used for diagnostics of COVID-19. So, but we also talked about the importance of educating public properly, because we are getting waves of misinformation, and unfortunately, White House has been miserable in their messaging. It's not really helping people to understand where we are with the disease and the treatments of it, which has been, you know, improved from the first months of the disease in New York. But bottom line is that in last 8 months or more, many new diagnostics and therapeutics are being investigated. And I think we finished the paper on a positive note that we should be optimistic about upcoming vaccines and treatments.
Beautiful. I know that there's a lot of myths about it, and maybe we could open up some of the myths. First of all, it is shown that it is an airborne disease, right? It is airborne, and that's why wearing masks and being kind of separated with each other and not necessarily being under the same roof helps with this, and it's happening all over the world. And we're seeing that although they relaxed a little bit in the European countries, that after the summer going around and opening up, they're getting the second wave really highly. So is that accurate? And can you share a little bit about the concept of how people can protect themselves within one, people getting tired of this and wanting to go back to work and, you know, their social gatherings. But also we're getting into the winter months, which the regular cold and season flu and all of them is going to be showing up. How can they protect themselves from, you know, getting COVID?
Obviously, the viral particles are nanoscale, very, very small, thousands of times smaller than the crosshair. So that will allow the virus to aerosolize. It basically just spread, you know, kind of into the air. Depending on the basically motions of air molecule, it can stay in the air, up in the air for a long time. So, you know, if you look at the data that came out of Johns Hopkins, which was published in Statica, one of the prestigious journals of statistics, it shows that U.S. is number 9 on basically death per capita. And countries like Japan, who have done a marvelous job of controlling COVID-19. They rank 113 off of 150 countries. China itself ranked 134. Well, some would argue that China did not report their numbers properly, but I would say Japan has been very honest with their numbers. So let's use Japan as an example and how they have actually put a lid on this pandemic. Obviously, Avigan helped them, which is, again, is an RNA-dependent RNA polymerase inhibitor like remdesivir. But also Japanese culture is as such that when the government says, physically distance yourself, put a mask on, everybody just put their mask on. There's no argument about masking, and that's part of their culture. So we went through whole argument of hydroxychloroquine and how could hydroxychloroquine prevent COVID-19. And then we saw that President Trump did not get hydroxychloroquine as part of his treatment, despite of the fact he was saying that he was taking hydroxychloroquine, he got COVID-19. So his case is a great case study that shows this drug was kind of hyped for whatever reason and was not used on president himself. Or if it was, he was using it, it really didn't help him to not get it. So I think the messaging of the White House has been truly miserable. And to say that, don't be afraid of COVID-19, of course, you should not be afraid of any type of disease in your life. You've got to move on with your life and live your life. But at the same time, you can't just be cavalier about it, as Dr. Fauci said that. So I think President Trump's approach to this issue has been misleading and, getting himself involved in promotion of a drug that didn't help him to get COVID-19, do not get COVID-19. And after he got the COVID-19, they didn't even use that drug is one of the examples of how this administration has failed the American public. Now, that's in the messaging. Coming back to our ranking, death per capita, we are number 9, Japan all the way down, 113. So comparing Japan to US, I think shows that we have not been able to control this pandemic, just based on the statistics and numbers.
Is there, I know based on experience that I've had with people around me and my clients who have been infected with COVID and afterward they have survived it and thank God nobody passed away. And I do know people's family members who have passed away. One of the major aspects of this is not only the nutritional aspect, the mental health aspect, but also the pain management. And many of them are not necessarily going to the hospitals. Some do. Some have gone to hospitals and stayed for about 8 days and then, have come out. Some, they're just asked to stay home and suffer through the pain that is excruciating and not necessarily given any particular medication. And they've said just to kind of ride it through if it hasn't been that extreme. What is your knowledge about the way that people have been treated as they go through the different aspects or the different, let's say, intensity or the chronicness of the illness? And what is it that they can do for themselves when they get infected and they know that they get infected? They've been tested, let's say.
So I think, obviously each case is different. So I refer your viewers to their primary care physician to work closely with them. And I encourage your viewers to notify their primary care physician as soon as they find out that they are COVID-19 positive. And then also, I encourage them to monitor their blood oxygenation and temperature. Again, those are decisions to be made between the primary care physicians, because each individual is going to have, kind of pre-existing conditions or not. And that the decision of going to ER or staying at home, it's really depends on such variables. I think, again, taking the case of President Trump, average Americans don't get to be transferred with helicopter to the military, top military facility to be treated with top of the line treatment that are currently under investigation and clinical trials. So for him to say that this was a blessing in disguise, it just really irresponsible. I think we have to be vigilant about COVID-19. Yes, there are treatments, there are better cares, and then there are vaccines coming up. But at the same time, we have to educate ourselves based on published and peer-reviewed studies, talk to our primary care physicians, get the data that is filtered based on good science and medicine, and act based on that, not based on which party is talking about what. As we all know, putting a mask on is very uncomfortable, even for my colleagues who are doctors. But it is a very kind of easy, cheap, and necessary step to be taken to avoid contracting this disease. So there are steps we can take to prevent it. Physically distance ourselves and also put a mask on. But at the same time, we have to make sure that we are not politicizing this pandemic.
I think this is the only country that I know that it's being politicized in this way. I mean, this is not an American invented, or a party invented disease. This is, it's an illness that is all over the world, and every country, every government is trying to figure out what is the best to keep everyone safe and moving forward. So I definitely do agree with you that it's unnecessary for it to get politicized. It's more about how do we prevent it from getting it. And obviously the best concept is getting your immune system in a better shape by the way that you maybe eat and exercise and sleep, and then putting the mask on, being able to not be in a closed environment with other people at this point. And, trying to do your best as far as work and socialization in a way that it's appropriate to the time until we get the viruses. Until we get the vaccinations, so that we could be a little bit more immune to it. Can you share with us your knowledge about the vaccinations that are out there and the promise for it, and how effective would they be?
In our paper, we reviewed many of those vaccinations. I do recommend that your viewers could get the paper. We can put a link on your website about the paper. but you know, kind of most of the vaccines are RNA based, and I think we will have some sort of a vaccine by late this year and early next year. Now, how the distribution of that going to work? That really depends on the competency of American government. But I also want to bring something here, and that's incompetency of the WHO. And, you know, WHO has been absolutely irresponsible and miserable in assessing this pandemic, notifying, you know, countries about the symptoms of COVID-19 early on. And then, you know, putting one after another misleading information, including telling us not to put the mask on, which I was surprised, and then including some press releases about use of Tylenol only for pain management of COVID-19. And then they just recently came with another article saying that, the pandemic shutdown was a mistake. I mean, you know, with the lockdown, we have lost 212,000 people in U.S. You know, imagine we did not have this lockdown. So WHO has been truly miserable. I mean, this executives of WHO, in my opinion, are criminals and need to face some sort of legal action, because they have been misleading the public globally. And if they had done a great job, this pandemic would be under control. So, you know, I would equally want to basically put a finger at WHO and tell them that they have been really miserable in their messaging. You know, it doesn't take that much to sit down, look at the data, look at your messaging, see what press release is going out. It's not really a rocket science, you know, but this conflicting messaging about use of different medications or not, you know, face masks or not, hiding the numbers from China when the virus started to spread. It's just a really unprofessional way of managing WHO.
Well, we know that Europe is going back into second shutdown. We are going to speak with an Israeli psychologist who lives in Tel Aviv right now. And she just said that they're going through the second shutdown. So obviously, you know, if people can refrain from being with each other a lot in closed spaces, there's until the vaccination is here, is going to limit the virus being or going around, because the virus all needs a host. So it needs to jump to another host, and if that's not available. And so it seems like in order not only to save lives, but in order to save people's condition at this point, I'm working with a family that the mother is a single mother who takes care of her two teenage sons and her own mother. She got COVID. She's in the hospital. Her own mother is in the hospital and very chronic. And two boys are at the house alone because there's nobody who can go there because the son also has COVID. So friends are going around and putting food behind the door, and they're calling and, you know, trying to figure this all out. But it's devastating for families when they get this. So it's not about, you know, they're coming out of the hospital, they didn't die, but the disruption that happens in the family system while they're going through the disease, it's also harsh. It's not just, okay, if you didn't die, all right, oh, well, you know, you survived it, it's okay.
People go through long-term effect, not only physiologically, but also mentally and in a resource services that they have around. So yes, so the more that we can, refrain and protect ourselves in order to not have the illness. And if we do get it, then we do the best that we can in order to protect ourselves, keep ourselves away from the public in order not to transfer this to the rest of the community that we have. And again, until we're all waiting until the medical industry creates the next level of vaccine and move forward. 1 minute, if there's anything we haven't covered that you really, really want the audience and our listeners and viewers to know.
Well, I think when we started to write this paper, we were focused on psychological and pandemic of mental illness, which I start talking about this in late March. We see pandemic of mental illness, of course, because of the lockdown, because of the loss of loved ones, shutdown of schools and so on. So I think it's upon us to make sure that we prevent the next pandemic of mental illness and really work together to not only calm down our compatriots, kind of reduce the level of stress and help each other socially, but also really, pay attention to the second wave that is going to hit us, pandemic flu that was, in the last century, really killed more, people. If you look at the Spanish flu, you'll see the second wave killed more people than the first wave. So we really have to make sure that's being paid attention to. We are also recommending that people get their flu vaccination and also get their MMR vaccination, which I think it will be helpful to boost their immune system and at least, take a preventive measure to our flu and somewhat provide protection against COVID-19.
Absolutely. I will put a link of the study into the YouTube channel and the podcast channel so that people can get that. Thank you so much. I know you are very busy, and thank you for finally for us to be able to come through and for you to let us know about the latest research. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much for this wonderful opportunity. Have a good day.
Thank you. And for all of you, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Dr. Fujian is a radio and TV host, international speaker, psychotherapist, life coach, and the author of Life Reset, The Awareness Path to Create the Life You Want. She brings you the latest research and interviews with experts in the field of cognitive sciences. Anyone who loves to grow and create growth for humanity gets a voice on this call-in show. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk KMET 1490 AM and on KMET1490AM.com.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain, and I am excited to have Thelma Lobel. She's an internationally recognized psychologist and an expert on human behavior. She's a former chair of the School of Psychological Sciences at Tel Aviv University and the director of the Adler Center for Child Development and Psychotherapy. She's been a visiting professor at Harvard University and a visiting scholar at Tufts University and the University of San Diego and New York University. Her previous book, Sensation, The New Science of Physical Intelligence, was published in 15 countries. Today, we will be talking about her new book, whatever works. The small cues that make a surprising difference in our success at work and how to create a happier office. Welcome to the show, Thelma.
Thank you. I'm very pleased to be here.
Well, thank you for being here from across the oceans. You are actually in Tel Aviv right now.
Right. I'm sitting in WC Technology. We can talk wherever we are.
Yeah. So I think that your book is really needed today, because as I was going through your book and looking at how people really needed to see about all of these different types of matters around them, whether it was their environment or, you know, the temperature and lighting, and we'll go through it. And I'd want everybody to know that it's, you know, first when I started looking at the book, and I thought, oh, it's just, you know, psychological concept. But it's beyond that. It's much more than that. You bring specific research for every one of these aspects, and you really land how each one of these particular and little concepts that we take it for granted means so much for our productivity and our well-being and our emotional well-being. But more than any time now, since the world of work has changed and most of us work from home, everything has changed. So it's beautiful. It's the right time for this book to be out. What made you want to write this book? Because obviously you're a psychologist and you work, but then you brought it into work, which is 8 to 10 hours, sometimes 12 hours of people's world is actually at work. So what made you want to write this book about people and their work?
Well, as you said, I all my life, professional life, I'm a professor of psychology, writing papers in professional journals, which are very good and very important. But I always wanted to write for the general audience, with based on science and on studies, but that will have takeaways for everybody, not only for professional psychologists who read these professional journals. So my first book, as you mentioned, Sensation, the New Science of Physical Intelligence, was the first one. And when I saw its success and how for so many languages, and I get these, till now, emails and questions from people all over, they said, you know, I took your advice and it changed me. It really made me want to write my second book, which is in a way a continuation, but this time focusing mainly on the work world. Although there are some takeaways that even if you don't work, you want to reduce your stress and things that we'll probably talk in a minute. So I'm very pleased I did that. I'll write another book for the general audience. I really feel that I enjoy it more than the professional journals that I wrote all my life, a professional life.
That's beautiful. And I enjoyed going through it, and I'm sure everybody who will learn a lot. So you kind of put it into three sections. One of them is whatever works at the office. And you're talking about the environment. And if you really look at the environment around you and how much it changes and ups or downs your productivity and your satisfaction, because you could be very productive but not feel satisfied throughout the day. So in order to raise those two, you look at the different aspects of the environment, the lighting, the temperature. And one of the things that was really interesting to me, two things you said, which was light really helps. And when you put on light, that you're more productive. But the other side of it was that there were signs and research that showed that in dark, people can become more unethical. Like they would do more unethical things when there's a darkness. And then there was this concept of the temperature, which most of people have shown that between 70 to 72 Fahrenheit, they do the utmost level of productivity. And that women operate much better under warmer conditions versus men. So let us know what would be the best way to create our environment so that we can be fulfilled with what we're doing and become productive.
Yeah, so actually you say, I'm very, you know, I love, you know, I have many interviews, but you are one of these interviews that read and understood, and you can answer my questions because you said it so nicely. Sorry. it's true. First of all, let's start with light. As you said, there are different angles of it, but many people, when they work on their computer, they can think that the room can be even almost dark because you can look at the computer screen and then you can see. But you become tired, especially when you work nonstop. You become tired. Your mental fatigue is a common thing. And one of the things is that if you are tired, increase the intensity of light in the room. There are studies, and everything that I say is based on studies, not something out of my head, that show that you become more energetic and perform better when the room is lighted. It's preferably with a daylight. But if you don't have a window or if it's in evening, increase the artificial light, but don't sit in a dim light. About ethical, there are many studies that show that, for example, people who had sunglasses compared to another group who had glasses, not sunglasses, regular glass, were less ethical. They cheated more. When they had to divide money fairly or not, they were less, they took more money to themselves and less to the other person. And the explanation is that you feel more anonymous. Even in both cases, nobody can see you. For example, if you're fair or not fair, it's the same. Or if you cheat, there were conditions that the room was more with higher light or dim. In both cases, the subjects were sure nobody can see them, but they cheated more in a dim room. So light has much more effect on us than we think, that just to see better. I can see the computer very well. Still, I'll perform better if there is a higher intensity in the room. And as I said, unethical. About temperature, as you said, there is the optimal temperature for the general audience. But women suffer more when it's cold. And I know, for example, when I go to meetings and I was in several board of directors, which unfortunately I'm one of the few women in the room. And I know that I have always in the summer to carry a jacket or a sweater in my purse because they will the temperature will be very low, with the air condition. First of all, if you're alone in the office, you can do what you want and you can arrange the temperature as comfortable for you. But remember that within the optimal range, which is not too cold and not too warm, make it a little bit towards the colder, because again, within the optimal range, you perform better when you're a little bit cold than when you're a little bit warm. I'm not talking about extremes. So even if you feel very comfortable when the room is quite warm, don't do that, because you will perform not as good. And even if you perform better, the same, then you will be more tired for the next job. So within the range of 68 to 73, something like that, make it towards the cooler side. And then, of course, what's comfortable for you, you feel, because there are individual differences and gender differences, as you said.
My experience has been that when I'm cold, I get irritated and agitated, and I make decisions a little bit faster, but not necessarily from a comfort place. But when I'm comfortable, warmer comfortable, not hot, but warmer comfortable, comfort comes in, like expansion of this more critical thinking when I'm cooler. There's a little bit additional comfort thinking in it when I'm a little bit warmer. But I do get that in both extremes get me agitated.
Oh, definitely. You don't work in extreme, I know, with both extremes. Right. But for example, there is another nice thing, I think, that people don't think about it. There were studies that showed that in a warmer temperature, people conform more to the other person's ideas. So if you're negotiating and you want the other person to agree with you, make the room a little bit warmer. On the other hand, if you're in a discussion group and you want to hear each person's opinion, not to be influenced by you, make it a little bit cooler.
It's amazing that all of these little stuff really, really affect us so much and we're not noticing.
Exactly.
You also talked about
how much it's important for us to go and get to the nature and bring green and blue into our world. And you said in order for us to be calmer, to go into the blue items such as water, whether we create blue and water concepts around our room, or we could actually go outside and be part of anything in nature that has water, and then the green space of bringing plants or going to places such as forest or gardens and all of that. In order to, I think for me, as I was reading your book, I realized that I get off of this type of a cerebral intense thinking and getting bogged down with very specific things. And then suddenly my way of thinking becomes expanded as I'm in the nature, and I become part of and one of versus becoming very, very limited. Can you share a little bit about that and how to incorporate the nature within our system?
Yeah, definitely. I think this is one of the most important takeaways, especially these days that we are all stressed because of the COVID-19, work is a stressful situation very often, you know, because of many things where some people are worried about their job, they're worried about this, the deadlines, a lot of things. But in these pandemic times, that people are not sure, some lost their jobs, some are afraid they might lose it. We are afraid about our health, about our parents' health. So nature is one of the easiest things and easy to implement that really, really help. There are many studies that show, for example, in China, in Stanford, in all over the world, that when they took two groups of people, one group, they asked them to take a walk or sit in the nature, and one group to walk or take a walk in urban environment. And then they asked them, they measured their physiological measures, like blood, blood pressure, all kind of the physiological that they want to go into, all of the cortisol level, which is a stress hormone. They found that those who walked or sat even in nature had lower physiological measures that showing that they were less stressed and less anxious compared to those who walked in urban environment. Also, it didn't only influence their stress, but it also influenced their performance. For example, after they came back, they gave them some cognitive tasks. Those who took a walk in nature performed better on cognitive tasks than those who took a walk in urban environment. So it's good to take a walk, to take a break, but if you can do it in nature, I want to add that some people can tell me, listen, I don't have a forest near my home or my office. So first of all, it doesn't have to be a forest or at the beach. It's great if you have them. You can go to a park or to the yard and look at flowers and trees. That's great too. But you can bring also plants into the office if you can. But go out if you can, take a break, even a short one. Two things. If you can't do even that, if you can't, you don't have, you live in, there are no trees outside, only an urban environment. And you don't have time to go out. That can be two. Take a few minutes even and look at photos of nature. You can look it on the screen or you can hang in your office. You can listen to nature voices like water or birds. These are all proven to influence you to perform better and to reduce your stress. I just want to say one more study that even 40 seconds is enough sometimes. There were two groups. One group, they were performing a cognitive task, then they took a break. And for 40 minutes, one group looked at the roof, which was green, and another group looked at the roof, which was all concrete. Then they had to continue their cognitive task. Those who looked for 40 seconds at the green roof performed better. So what I'm saying is if you have the time, go even for half an hour, preferably to nature. Doesn't have to be forest, but nature. If you don't have the time, even look from the window at the trees and flowers. And if you don't have all these, look at pictures. They will all make you look perform better and reduce your stress. And easy.
You also talked about the two other sections of your book. One is the whatever works for your team, which you talk about how even involuntary or not knowing subconscious ways that we have our volume, talk about the tonality, the gesture of body, the way that we express our emotions really affects the way that our team works with us. And, you know, whether they do ethical or unethical behaviors or the way that we create a space and a team that is diverse. And even you brought it down to clothing in how we dress, you know, creates that type of success or productivity or satisfaction and how it relates with other people in that way. Can you share a little bit about this section of your book, please?
Sure. There are so many things, and I hope people will read whatever works, and because we, you know, we can't. But so I'll choose one thing about the clothes. We all know that the way we are dressed influences, unfortunately, but it influences the way we are perceived by others. This we know, and especially in the case of women who were dressed a little bit more provocatively, not too much, but one more button open. Or the dress was a little bit shorter, were perceived as less effective managers, for example, and things like that. So we know that. But I'm talking about that in the book, but I want to talk about something that I think people are less aware of. The way we are dressed influences our own behavior. There are several studies that show, for example, let me show you one study. There were one group was given a white coat, like a doctor's coat, and the other group was not given anything. And they were asked to perform some cognitive tasks. Those who were given the white coat performed better because they felt like they are smarter than our doctors. Then the researchers made another study. They gave one group a white coat and told them it's a doctor's coat. And the other group was given a white coat and they were told it's a painter coat. Those who were given the white coat thinking it's a doctor's coat performed better. There was another study about negotiations also. One group was dressed, you know, like you go to negotiations, you know, more business-like. The other group was told to dress, you know, with sandals and the sweatpants and all that. And those were dressed professionally got better concessions in their negotiations. So remember that also in Zoom meetings. Even if you you see only my upper part, don't sit with your underwear, not only because people might look because you get up, but because it might influence, especially if you go to an interview via Zoom or important negotiations, and you're sure nobody can see that part. Dress as if you go to the interview, because it will influence the way you behave.
Right.
I think it's important.
We only have like 2 minutes, and I really want us to also converse about the third section of your book, which says whatever works for you. And you talk about technology use and, you know, if you're listening to things and the way that you create order around you and your creativity. The world has changed. So we are constantly using the technology, whether our this type of technology of Zoom and Google, you know, things that we could see each other and converse. We conduct meetings this way. We don't even meet people half at a time face to face anymore. We conduct interviews this way. And the other side of it is our phones and social media constantly coming at us. You know, the minute we want to concentrate on some things, this thing is giving us notification. And also as far as work, you know, people now check your social media about your character. So what you put on social media is also very important because it shows who you are for the rest of the world as who you are also at work. Can you share a little bit within one minute? So that we could definitely cover it. This is very important for people to know.
Okay, so since I have only 1 minute, so in the book, I'm writing, as you said, about creativity separately, about a phone, but let me just say one thing about the phone. There are studies that showed that even when the phone was on the desk, turned off, people who had that phone turned off on the desk performed worse than people who were told to leave the phone in another room. So my first takeaway, if you're focusing on something, you're concentrating on something important, take the phone and put it in another room, especially if you work at home, it's very easy to do that. Don't say, I'm not looking at it, or I turned it off. It still disturbs you when it's turned off. And about creativity, if there's another minute, there are many tips like look at the blue color or green color, doodle. I have many, many tips in the books that really are easy and were proven to increase your creativity. So
Thelma Lobel, whatever works, the small cues that make a surprising difference in our success at work and how to create a happier office. You can find Thelma at thelmalobel.com. And I really enjoyed our conversation. I really enjoyed the book. And thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. I really enjoyed the interview, and I hope people will read more in the book and see so many more takeaways.
Absolutely. I think it's a fantastic book, and it gives you a lot of new nuances about things you never thought about and how important they are for your productivity and fulfillment in life altogether. And thank you, everyone, for being with us, for listening with your heart with us, and create an amazing life for yourself and everyone around you. And until next week, bye-bye.